Welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Welcome to Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, where we'll be discussing side letters. My name is Jana Kissel, and I'm here with Ben Dunbar from the commercial property team. 2018 has been a year in which many tenants have been in trouble financially. Today, my colleague Ben is going to talk about an issue that may come up when a landlord is confronted by a tenant in trouble, granting a concession to the tenant. The tenant may contact the landlord and request a relaxation of the strict terms of the lease as to the amount of rent paid, or for rent to be paid monthly rather than quarterly. It might be difficult to find another tenant, and the landlord may well be minded to agree. These personal concessions are recorded in something called a side letter. Ben, can you explain what a side letter is?
Well, a side letter is the way for a landlord and tenant to record a concession that's personal to that tenant. It's not a variation of the lease. If it's drafted correctly, it's quite clear that it falls away if that tenant assigns the lease or underlets the premises. However, it is binding on successors in title of the landlord if it's been drafted correctly from the tenant's point of view, because otherwise the landlord could simply assign the property to another landlord and then the tenant wouldn't get the benefit of the side letter anymore.
So what points should a landlord consider if a tenant contacts it asking for a personal concession?
Well, this is happening more and more. Recently it was reported that Casual Dining Group have engaged a restructuring specialist to contact landlords of its chains Bella Italia and Las Iguanas to negotiate lower rents with the landlords. So if you're a landlord and you're contacted by an agent of your tenant, I think you would really want to require evidence of the financial hardship and proof before agreeing. You'd want to do some financial due diligence into that tenant or that tenant group and find out if this is just a try-on to lower the rent or if there's really something more behind it and whether it makes sense logically for you to agree a lower rent or if you're just prolonging the inevitable and that tenant isn't going to make it. If there's a guarantor, you should make sure that the guarantor of the tenant is also part of the deal and that they sign the side letter to show that they're aware of and acknowledge the terms and that the guarantee continues and isn't in any way compromised by the entering into of the side letter. You yourself as landlord may have a bank involved, bank lending and finance, and the mortgagee's consent may well be required. You wouldn't want to grant a concession to find out that you're in breach of your own banking covenants. As we're going to find out, you should consider how long will the side letter concession period last. Will it simply run until that tenant assigns the lease or underlets, or will it cease if they cease occupation, or is it going to be limited to a short period of time whilst this tenant sorts themselves out? Is the concession going to end if the tenant fails to observe the terms of the lease, or indeed the side letter? Is it going to end on notice, or is it going to end automatically? We'd recommend that it should end on notice. That avoids a problem where the landlord doesn't realise that the side letter agreement has ended, or just as bad, it does know, but it keeps accepting the rent paid at the lower level or paid monthly instead of quarterly, and it runs the risk of being estopped from treating the concession as ended. Or it could be argued that it's varied the terms of the side letter by its conduct, or even that the lease has been varied by conduct. If you're the landlord, you'd want to avoid any argument that any of those things had happened. You should also be aware of a recent case in which the termination provisions of a side letter were construed as a penalty, and that case should inform your drafting.
So you mentioned that there is a recent case law that landlords and tenants should both be aware of. Can you tell us a bit more about the case?
It's a recent case called Vivian Westwood Limited versus Conduit Street Development Limited. And in this case, the termination provisions in a side letter were construed as a penalty and held to be unenforceable by the High Court. It was the first time the High Court had considered the law of penalty in the context of landlord and tenant. The facts were that Vivian Westwood had taken a lease for 15 years of some premises in Conduit Street. The lease was dated 18 November 2009. The rent was £110,000 per annum. It had upward-only rent reviews every 5 years, as is normal. So rent reviews in November 2014 and November 2019. However, simultaneously with the lease being entered into, the landlord and tenant entered into a side letter. And this stated that whatever was stated in the lease, the rent was to be treated as £90,000 in the first year, going up in steps to £100,000 after 5 years, and then the rent review was to be capped at £125,000. So in 2014, the open market rent review would be carried out. It would be subject to a cap. So if the open market rent was higher than £125,000, it would be taken to be £125,000. If it was lower, it would be the lower amount. Now, this side letter had a provision, which is quite common, that stated, if you, the tenant, breach any of the terms and conditions contained in this agreement, or any term of the lease, or any document supplemental to it, for example, a license to alter, we may terminate this agreement with immediate effect, and the rents will be immediately payable in the manner set out in the lease, as if this agreement never existed. Those final words were quite significant. Now, there was some error, and Vivian Westwood didn't pay the rent one quarter. The landlord immediately contacted them, told them that they were treating the side letter as terminated, and that what they regarded as the true rent, which was £232,500, was due. However, it was worse than that. They also said that the rent was backdated, so it was due at the higher level from 2009, when the lease started. There was also interest payable going back to 2009 as well. That was the effect of the words stating that the side letter had fallen away as though it had never existed. Vivian Westwood went to court asking for a declaration of the High Court that these termination provisions constituted a penalty and were unenforceable. The court considered whether the provisions were a penalty.
So Ben, what is a penalty?
Well, a penalty is stated to be a contractual provision imposing a detriment on the party in breach of a primary obligation which is out of all proportion to any legitimate interest of the innocent party in the performance of the obligation. And the court considered that by three questions. The threshold issue is the first. Is it a secondary obligation engaged upon the breach of a primary contractual obligation? Here, they stated that the true bargain of the parties was that the primary obligation was to pay the rent as set out in the side letter. If the tenant failed to do that, then the secondary obligation or penalty kicked in, and that was to pay the higher rent. Now, this was quite a surprising analysis because practitioners in commercial property would normally think that the primary contractual obligation was that set out in the lease to pay the open market rent, and that the effect of the side letter would be a kind of temporary personal waiver of that. But on the facts here, it was held that the true bargain was that the rent was at a lower level and the penalty was to pay it at a higher level. The second limb of the test was, what is the nature and extent of the legitimate interest of the innocent party in having the primary obligation performed? Well, here the landlord obviously did have a legitimate interest in the rent at the side letter level being paid. However, he fell foul of the third limb. Is the secondary obligation exorbitant or unconscionable in amount or in effect? Here the court held that it was. There were various reasons. One was that the side letter could be terminated for any breach, not just for a non-trivial or material breach. Another was the clause I've discussed already, which had a retrospective effect. On termination, the tenant was liable for historic rents and interest, not just rent going forward. The landlord also had adequate remedies. If the rent was late, it could have charged the tenant late payment of interest. It could have forfeited if it felt so strongly about it, or it could have sued for damages if it could have proven any. So overall, the court held that the termination provisions were a penalty and that they were unconscionable and hence unenforceable. The effect of this was that the side letter hadn't fallen away and it continues on.
Have you got any practical advice in light of this recent case for landlords and tenants in dealing with side letters?
Yes, I think landlords and tenants need to consider the drafting of side letters more carefully than perhaps they've done in the past. This case was surprising, particularly the analysis I referred to earlier of what the primary obligation was. I think drafting side letters, it needs to be clear that they don't change the tenant's primary obligation. The primary obligation is to pay the rent as set out in the lease. The side letter is just a waiver as a personal concession to the tenant. Termination provisions should be considered rather than happening automatically. As I suggested earlier, it should be on notice from the landlord. That way the landlord controls the situation better. Another bit of practical advice for landlord and tenants in the side letters is that they should set out explicitly what is to happen when the side letter terminates. For instance, if the side letter allows the tenant to pay rent on a monthly basis rather than a quarterly one, and the side letter is terminated by the landlord halfway through a quarter, then obviously the full quarter's rent would have been payable. So it should set out explicitly that they need to pay the balance. And then the question arises of whether the tenant should be required to pay interest on the rent that would have been deemed late. It should set out clearly whether that's going to be at a penalty rate, but perhaps it would be fairer just for normal interest to be charged. Either way, if the side letter sets out clearly, the landlord's got a better chance of arguing that the provisions of the side letter are fair and legitimate. Overall, the main tip is that landlords and tenants need to look at the terms of existing side letters to consider whether there may be problems or clauses that, in light of this case, aren't enforceable. And going forwards, the next time they enter into one, they should make sure the drafting is tight and doesn't fall foul of this case law.
Thank you, Ben, for your insight into side letters, and thank you to everyone for listening. If you have any queries, please contact us via our website.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell. Building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.